I love the story of the healing of the paralytic. It's one of those that just has a lot of good feelings about it, and like to reflect upon it. It's a story that's rich, however. It's got so many components, and yet it seems rather straightforward as it comes. It happens at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He has been out and about making a name for himself. He comes back to the town of Capernaum, where they already know who he is. And so when the word gets out that he's there, the crowds come, and so much so that he's in a house, and the crowds fill the house, and they're outside. One can picture people crowding around the door, jumping up, trying to peek in a window just to get a glimpse of this guy, maybe just to hear a word that he might be teaching inside that room. Meanwhile, somewhere outside that house, somewhere, maybe on the outskirts of the whole town, is a man who is paralyzed. Now, we don't know much about him, but what we do know is that some people have brought him to see Jesus. Now, I suggested in my children's message that these were friends, and they were being friends to him, but we don't know if they were close friends or just people that wanted to help. But they certainly were being friends to the man, the paralytic. And so they bring him up to the house, and they get to the house, and it's, again, crowded. They individually can't squeeze through the crowd, so you can imagine it. They're trying to carry this man who cannot walk, trying to carry him in. That would be an impossibility. But these are resourceful friends, and they know how the houses were built in that time, and that the roof was less than, well, it was permeable, I guess would be the word. Roofs at that time were made by beams going across, and in between these beams, branches were laid, and then a layer of clay was put over it to seal it. You could walk up there, but you had to be careful, and certainly it wouldn't take a lot of effort to punch a hole through the roofs at that time, and that's exactly what they did. They got themselves up on the roof. They got the paralyzed man up on the roof. They punch a hole in the roof, and there they lower him down till he is right there at the feet of Jesus. I read this, and the reason I like it is it reminds me of a story of my dad told about how he and his brother went up into the attic, and his brother fell through the attic and landed on his dad's lap while he was reading the Sunday paper. That's my image I have when I read this here. Okay, that he falls there to Jesus' feet, right in the middle of whatever teaching Jesus is. Whoa, wham, there he is, right in front. And Jesus says to the man, you know, he cures the man. And that's the wonderful ending to the story. Take up your mat and walk away, and he does that sort of thing. So we have this wonderful story in the Bible. And I look at it and say, now, what do we do with that story? What do we do with that story? And there seem to be several sort of components to it, or points of interest, perhaps, as we go through the story. Mark certainly tells the story to set up what is going to be a theme throughout his gospel, and that is the confrontation between Jesus and the authorities of the time. And so when this man is lowered between them, Jesus doesn't actually heal him right away. He says, your sins have been forgiven. And the authorities that are there in the room trying to check out who this guy is see this as blasphemy. Only God can forgive sins. And so their hackles are up right away. And Mark tells us that Jesus perceives what they're talking about and says, so, you know, which is better, that I forgive his sins or tell him to stand up? Well, I'll tell you what, I'm just going to tell him to stand up and be healed. And he does. He tells the man to stand up, take your mat, and walk out of here. And that's exactly what he does. And the crowd is amazed. But those religious authorities, the seed has been planted of confrontation that will eventually lead to Jesus at the cross. Now, another sort of angle on this story, approach to this story, is the people that brought this paralyzed man to be healed by Jesus. I mentioned earlier that it could be friends, could have been strangers, could have been neighbors, but they certainly were acting as good friends to this person. And not only bring, but the persistence that they had. You can't get in this way, we're going to try to get in that way, but we've got to get this guy. It's not for themselves they're doing this. It's for the paralyzed man. We got to get him in there. And so you have to admire that, don't you? That persistence, that stick-to-itness, that at first you don't succeed, you try again, you're going to do it, and not for themselves, but for someone else. What a model of Christian life that is right there. And as I reflected upon this story this week, I realized there's a third angle to this story, and that was the paralyzed man himself. We don't know anything about him. We know he was paralyzed. We don't know how severe it was. Apparently, he couldn't get there on his own and had to be carried. I didn't realize this would be the Sunday that the elevator would be fixed. Huh? There's got to be a connection there, right? They had to be brought there. We don't know his name. We don't know anything about him. We don't know what happened to him. We only know his state in life. And we can surmise from that time that he lived on the margins of his society. He had no way to earn a living. He depended on others for whatever he had, for his daily bread, if you will. He had no hope of ever getting better. There were no scientific research centers doing nerve regeneration experiments to help him regain the use of his legs. He didn't even have any mobility assistance program where he could get a great wheelchair. No, he was at the mercy of others, and he had to live that way. And I can imagine what it must have felt like when word got to him that there was this guy who could do miracles, who could heal people of what ailed them. Here was his chance, and yet he had no way to get there. No way to get there. And yet, through the help of some friends, he is able to get there, and lo and behold, despite the obstacles, he is finally healed. And in that healing is also confrontation, isn't there? Well, it didn't involve him directly, the confrontation between Jesus and the authorities. The authorities who recognized there was something wrong going on here, even if they weren't sure what to do about it. And yet Jesus was telling them, it's not wrong, it's right. It's not wrong, it's right. It's right that this man be able to walk. Full circle. And you know something, that full circle continues today, doesn't it? I couldn't help thinking about it's a circle that we continue to deal with today. Those who live on the margins of our society need help to have their dreams realized. Obstacles must be overcome. And in the end, it becomes a confrontation with those in authority. Does it sound like anything we are familiar with today? I don't know. I couldn't help thinking, what a challenge life must be like, and a challenge for those of us who would be friends. It certainly seemed like something today. Over these past 2 weeks, we have become fully aware of a crisis involving refugees that come to our borders. The crisis was brought to a head because of a decision to separate parents and children. But the crisis was certainly there. We just didn't know about it well beforehand. I learned that last Wednesday was World Refugee Day. I never knew there was a World Refugee Day. Did you? Of course, when it happens in the midst of what is the dominating news cycle, it seemed to fit in. World Refugee Day. Where it was the UN, the World Health Organization, some organization has estimated there is 65 million refugees in the world now. People displaced from their home because of hunger, because of economics, because of war, because of politics, or in the case of the refugees that made the news because of gang violence in their homeland. Thousands, even tens of thousands, are coming to our border, but there are millions around the world. Refugee crisis. The ones that came to our border, of course, made the news because of the decision to separate children from their parents. I saw a thing online about famous children who were refugees. I didn't know. For example, Mila Kunis, the actress, was a refugee from the Ukraine, left at the age of 7. Her family moved to the U.S. on a religious refugee visa after facing anti-Semitism. Basketball player Lou Alding fled from war-torn Sudan as a 5-year-old, moved to London. He went on to become a basketball player playing for the Chicago Bulls and the Los Angeles Lakers. Gloria Estefan, born in Cuba but fled the country during the Communist Revolution in 1959. Family moved to Miami. Those are just a few of dozens of famous people, refugees. I learned that Henry Kissinger was a refugee. I already knew that Albert Einstein was a refugee during World War II. Refugees, these are people. People. I was considering this story and thinking about how you had people living on the margins of whatever society they're a part of, seeing an opportunity, trying to make something happen, overcoming upon obstacles, confronting authorities, all in the hope of something better. And the connection that made with the story of the paralytic. And yet the one thing that was missing in that story are the friends that help the paralytic. These people are looking for friends. From time to time, they find those friends in various organizations, individuals, even governments. The question lies before us, will they find their friends in the church? That's what we struggle with today. Do we find the friends in the church? Certainly, church leaders have made a proclamation. Episcopal Bishop Michael Curry, who came to world prominence when he spoke at the royal wedding a few weeks ago, he told members of his church, it is because we are followers of Jesus, because we follow the way of love, because we follow the way of compassion, because we follow the way of human decency and kindness, that we as a church and as individual Christians and Episcopalians must be passionately committed to helping the refugees and displaced of the world. The Southern Baptist Convention at their annual meeting this week said, "We continue to encourage Southern Baptist churches and families to welcome and adopt refugees into their churches and their homes as a means to demonstrate to the nations that our God longs for every tribe, tongue, and nation to be welcomed at his throne." Presbyterians spoke through their stated clerk, Herbert Nelson, who wrote this week, "The crisis of tens of thousands of desperate people coming to the United States for relief seems almost overwhelming. But as the officials of our government attempt to address the crisis, we cannot afford to tarnish the highest values of our nation. We must not punish the desperate parents by tearing their children away from them, leaving the parents without access to the children or assistance of their welfare, assurance of their welfare." Just three statements. But the question comes down for all of us, whether it's refugees or just that are somewhere coming to our borders or just even within our towns, how are we going to be friends to them? I wore this stole this morning. It was made by refugees. When I was part of the church in Green Bay, Wisconsin, a Presbyterian church, this is a church about our size in terms of membership, in terms of number of people that worshiped on a Sunday. And yet, before I left that church after 3 years, and by the way, it wasn't because I was a pastor, I was a member of that church, left to go to seminary, we had about 25 refugee families from Laos. And they made this, and the church gave this to me when I told them I was going to go to seminary. They gave me this stole. 25 families who had made their way to Green Bay, Wisconsin, of all places, to find a better life. And when they got there, they went to the Presbyterian church because when they were in Laos, Presbyterian missionaries taught them about Jesus. And so when they saw the word Presbyterian, a word that they couldn't read, but they recognized, they said, "That church is home. That church is home." And they came and they worshiped it. And all but one of them couldn't understand a word of the worship service. They had one man who could speak English when they first started coming, but they filled rows of the church because they understood that they were welcome there. A church that had no idea who they were. It wasn't like we went over and said, "Let's find some Laotian refugees to bring back." They just showed up at that church's doorstep and the church welcomed them. And I think that's the message of this passage today, that we figure out how we can be welcoming. I know there are politics involved. I know there are laws involved. I know there are complicated issues, but when it comes down to the church, God invites us to be welcoming friends to everyone, but especially those who have been crippled by life in some way. If we can figure out how to do that, I think we have learned the lesson of the paralytic. Amen.